Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? It's me for Lee and Keith. I'm on a little early since we had to go live. Couldn't set up the show for 6:15 for some strange reason. The site we use don't give you quarter hours, it only give you o'clock or 30. So couldn't do set up 6:15. So I'm hopping on 5 minutes early. You know, my homeboy, my co-host Keys, he'll be on here shortly. We get another good show tonight. Doing a lot of UFC talk today. Talking UFC Sunrise, that what happened this past weekend. We're going to talk about upcoming fights. The news came out today, DC versus Stipe 2 in August. And we'll talk about a couple of other things. But I'm going to jump into the NFL draft right now. NFL draft happened over this weekend. It was it's always exciting to me because, you know, I just like to see, you know, which direction my team going to go in, which direction other teams going to go in. See guys that I watched on TV on Saturdays finally have their dreams fulfilled. You know, getting their name called by the commissioner and stuff like that. But it was a lot of people criticizing the Giants this past weekend when they took Daniel Jones at number 6. You know, I think I had a stat today where he was 7-17 against ACC competition. During his time at Duke, which isn't a good thing. And the ACC football isn't one of the best conferences in America, but it is a credible conference because you do have Clemson, Florida State, Miami, Virginia Tech, you know, Syracuse, Virginia, depending on what year you play Notre Dame. So, you know, the ACC is a pushover conference, but it isn't a powerhouse conference at the same time either. Me being a Redskins fan, I was kind of happy that the Giants took Daniel Jones at 6 because it allowed us to draft our quarterback of the future, Dwayne Haskins at 15. Really didn't expect him to be at 15. I thought the Dolphins might have took him at 13, but they didn't. So, you know, he fell to us, which is cool. I think New England taking the wide receiver in the first round was a shocker to some. Well, people thought they might take a tight end due to Gronk leaving, or they might, you know, go defense because Belichick is a defensive coach. But I like N'Keal Harry. I think he's going to be a good fit for the Patriots. And I also like what the Steelers did. Trades up to number 10 with the Broncos to take Devin Bush out of Michigan. You know, they had a need for inside linebacker since Ryan Shazier went down. And unfortunately, Ryan Shazier will miss this year also. So, Ryan Shazier, if you listen and get well soon, bro. And we are looking forward to getting back on the football field. I think the big story is Kyler Murray going number 1. Kyler Murray, 5'9", quarterback out of Oklahoma Heisman Trophy winner. The shortest quarterback ever taken number 1 overall. I think Kyler has a lot to prove, but I think he's going to the right offensive situation with Cliff Kingsbury to maximize his skill set. So Kyler might be, I think he's going to be in a good situation. So, everything, you know, we have to let it play out on the field, play out in practice, and see what happens. I think the draft, Nashville, put on a hell of a show. They had a lot of fans out there supporting the draft, probably more people I've ever seen at a draft, even in the rain. I think the first night they said they had over 200,000 people. The second night they had over 100,000. And then throughout the weekend, they had 20, 30, 40,000 people. So Nashville to put on a hell of a show, that's going to be hard to top. I hope Denver, I live in Denver, I hope one day we can host a draft. But the only thing about Denver is the weather is so unpredictable that you don't know now it's going to snow. You don't know what it's going to be cold, it's going to be sunny. So it's kind of hard to predict something like that. So most likely, you know, they'll probably have to have it indoors somewhere. And the only place I can figure they can have it indoors would be the Pepsi Center. But I don't think the Pepsi Center would give you the same aura as being like Nashville had. Nashville was off the chain. So, but, you know, USC Sunrise this past weekend, you had Jacare Souza versus Jack Hermanson. You had, I forgot that thing. You had Mike Perry and Cowboy Oliveira. You had John Lineker and Stan Hagen. You had Greg Hardy again against some guy, Smolarenko or something like that. You had fan favorites, Colin Sparza. You had Jim Miller. You had my favorite, Angela Hill. You know, you had all them on the card this weekend down in Sunrise, Florida. Great night of fight, like always, for the UFC. I think a lot of people were surprised with the outcome of the main event. I don't know why, but a lot of people surprised by the outcome of the main event. Hermanson has been on the tear here lately. You know, I think one thing about Jacare is if you are a technical striker, he can be got. He can be got by technical strikers. That's just the way it goes with him. I'm not saying his chin is weak. I'm just saying that his defense sometimes is lacking when defending himself against strikers. If you look at the Robert Whittaker fight, you know, Whittaker got him. Gastelum got him. I know him and Yoel Romero had a good scrap. But, you know, Jacare, you know, he did say before the fight that if he won, if he didn't get a title shot, he would retire. So a lot of people assume that he would retire after this loss. But he's not retiring. His manager or his trainer came out this week and said he will be back, which is good for the sport. I really don't know which direction he goes from here. Maybe he goes, I don't know. I really don't know what he does at this point in time. I would have to look at the rankings to see exactly where he's at. I'll do that a little later when my man Keys get on. But, you know, I wasn't shocked that he lost. I actually predicted him to lose because I just had a feeling about Hermanson. Hermanson has definitely been flying under the radar here lately. But he's a force to be reckoned with within that division now. Anytime you could beat a name like Jacare Souza, you have done something in the UFC. You've done something in mixed martial arts. So I'm looking for him to continue to do big things in the division, and we'll see what happens. You know, I have definitely been a proponent here over the last year, year and a half, of new blood being introduced to the fan base, to the UFC fan base, because, you know, we know the likes of Daniel Cormier. We know the likes of John Jones. We know the likes of Jose Aldo. We know the likes of GSP, you know, people of that. We know them guys. But we don't know the likes of Thiago Santos, Jack Hermanson, Corey Sandhagen, Marlon Moraes, you know, these up-and-coming guys that are just, I ain't going to say busting on the scene, but are doing their thing once they get in the spotlight. They're making the fans take note of who they are and showcasing their skill set. So I'm happy about that. I hope Hermanson continues to do good things. I hope he continues to go up the ladder. Hopefully he don't get into his next fight, whoever his next fight may be, and he calls out a champion, calls for a championship match. A lot of these guys, you know, they get one big win or they get two big wins, and suddenly they feel like that propels them for a title shot. No, it doesn't. It just means that you are fighting your way towards a title shot. So I think Hermanson will go about it the right way. I'm not going to spend no time really on Greg Hardy. You know, Hardy is a guy that that is polarizing right now. You got a lot of people, a lot of fans in the UFC who probably watching his fights to see him lose because they know his past history as far as domestic abuse. Then you got some other fans that won't watch because of his past domestic abuse history. And then you got some fans that feel that he hasn't earned his way to a couple of his billings and co-main events or main event status. I'm in the last group. I just don't feel like he deserves to be booked as a main event or a co-main event because his skills don't dictate that. His record doesn't dictate that. If anything, if they were gonna make Greg Hardy the co-main event, they could have made John Lineker versus Corey Sandhagen the co-main event. You know, they could have made Mike Perry and Cowboy Oliveira the co-main event. At least those names that we know. John Lineker has been putting in work for years. You know, Corey Sandhagen just got called up. I think he got called up in January 2018 from the LFA. And, you know, he fought on 8 days' notice. So, you know, Corey Sandhagen.
Yo.
But, you know, yo, what's going on, bro?
Oh, my bad. Finish what you were saying. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, I was just finishing up on Greg Hardy. You know, I was telling the people that, you know, Greg Hardy is a polarizing athlete right now in the UFC because you got a fan base that really doesn't know how to react to him. You know, you got people that want to watch him lose because of his past transgressions. Then you got people that don't want to watch him at all. You know, they won't watch him at all, you know. And then you got people like me who just feel that he shouldn't be booked as a main event or a co-main event because his record doesn't dictate it, his number of fights doesn't dictate it, his skill set doesn't dictate his being booked as a main or co-main event. And, you know, once again, you know, I really didn't watch his fight Saturday, but, you know, I heard Dana White wasn't too happy with the fight after the fight went off. So I think the UFC might be learning a lesson about how to book him, or maybe they'll maybe get him a better opponent next time, you know, so that maybe people will become more interested in him. But what up, my man Keys? How you doing, bro? How was the day?
Well, I mean, first of all, I just wanted to. Can you hear me good?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I just wanted to say, my bad that I was late, y'all. It was pretty much back to back to back today, and I kind of scheduled too many things into one block, and in too small of a span of time, and end up being a few minutes late. So I apologize for that. And secondly, to chime in on on this topic is that, yeah, I think, you know, aside from everybody's opinions about the guy and aside from, you know, especially aside from the way I feel about the guy, I'm looking at it with a more objective approach, you know, kind of going off what you said, you know, being that Dana White, you know, wasn't too happy with the fight. And then, you know, you said maybe that's because they should have given him a better opponent. I think that's pretty much hit the nail on the head. That's what they needed to do because, you know, looking at it, just like look at these two guys, like the guy that they brought in there. First of all, I didn't even know who that was. I never heard of that guy that he was fighting. So right once I looked at it and I realized that I had never heard of him before, I knew that it was like a squash match. Like that right there, I think that's called a squash match when you just kind of put a guy was basically like a jobber. Like he that was nothing. I thought it was a setup. I thought they just did it to give him a guy they knew he could beat. That's what I honestly thought the promotion did. But I mean, they claim that they don't make fights like that, but that seemed like one because you have a guy who, you know, Greg Hardy coming in. He's got a, you know, handful of knockouts under his belt. So this guy likes to throw his hands. And then another guy who is more known for losing fights and being the one getting knocked out, if anything. And he was also, if I'm not mistaken, previously cut from the UFC because he was losing. You know, you lose 3-4 fights, you know, or just have really bad performances and you're just overall not UFC caliber. You get cut from the UFC. This guy was cut, Hardy's opponent, and then they brought him back. So I think they brought him back for this fight. So I knew that, you know, when the fight was first announced. I looked into it, and I knew that about his opponent, and that made me less intrigued about it because I'm like, they're pretty much just giving this guy somebody who they know he can beat. You really can't convince me otherwise about that. You know, there's some people out there that will say that, you know, the guy was a game opponent. How was that guy a game opponent? If he was a game opponent, I think I would have heard of him before. I think you would have heard of him before. I think anybody would have known anything about him. I know a lot of these fighters. You know a lot of these guys. We would have known of him if he was a game opponent in the heavyweight division. I never knew this guy, and it ain't just me, but I never saw someone mention this guy, and then now all of a sudden it's a co-main event. They brought this guy back who was cut from the UFC to fight Greg Hardy. They knew, hey, they could say what they want, but I think that was just a match to just boost his, you know what I'm saying? They just gave him an easy win. That's their own problem. Like you said, that's a booking issue. They should, you know, his next fight to correct it, if Dana White wants to see, if he wants to be more happy with the fight, book him somebody who Dana White is excited to watch. Who's a heavyweight that Dana White likes to watch, and put Hardy against him. Put him against somebody who people actually know. And you know who I think will be a good fight for him? I think Juan Adams would be a good fight for Greg Hardy. Juan Adams is actually fighting on.
He called him out on Twitter, didn't he?
He did. He's called him out multiple times. And this is, and the reason why I say this is because Juan Adams is, first of all, he comes from, you know, he had success in Dana White's Contender Series. So it's a new blood guy who has, you know, a system fighter who has come up through the system, you know, through the UFC system, not just, you know, kind of, you know, coming in and not really having proved himself in the proving grounds, per se. You know, this guy came through, and he's, pretty sure he's 5-0. With 5 knockouts, and what's Greg Hardy? I think Greg Hardy's 5-1 now, or 4-1, I think, in his career. So I feel like they're pretty much at the same level of experience. 5-1?
Hold on. Go ahead, keep talking. I'm going to look it up for you.
Yeah, so what I'm just trying to say is I think Juan Adams is a good opponent for him because them guys are pretty much at the same level of experience. I'm almost positive Greg Hardy's 5-1 now, and Juan Adams is 5-0, and he's fighting. Juan Adams is fighting this weekend in Ottawa. I forget the name of the guy he's fighting, but he's 6-1.
Wade Hardy is 6-1.
Yeah, but either way, this guy is about to have his 6th MMA fight this weekend in Ottawa. So, to me, they're pretty much on the same level. I think that's the fight to make.
Yeah, he's 6-0. Juan Adams is 6-0.
All right, so that's even better then, because they have now pretty much the exact same amount of fights. Greg Hardy's 6-1. Win or lose, Juan Adams, this will be his 7th fight. They have the same amount of professional experience. Both guys like to throw hands. Both guys knockout artists, got a lot of power. Both guys, you know, want to talk that shit. You know, I've seen Greg Hardy, you know, getting more competitive in interviews, you know, saying that, you know, he's more athletic than a lot of the heavyweight division. I've seen, you know, Juan Adams calling out Greg Hardy multiple times on Twitter, saying that they've been giving this guy cans to fight, you know, otherwise easy fights. So I think that's the fight to make. You really can't convince me otherwise. I don't see what's a better fight than that.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I was thinking that they might, as long as they don't rush Greg Hardy and they get him time to develop his skills, because there's no need to put him in there against a top 10 guy. I was thinking that maybe they could put him in there against a top fringe 15 guy. But, you know, after hearing Juan Adams call him out on Twitter and all this good stuff, I think even our boy Brett Okamoto suggested that Greg Hardy should fight Juan Adams next. So, you know, I'm kind of for that. You know, I think either which way it goes, if Juan wins or if Greg wins, you get him probably a top 15, top 20 fringe guy as their next fight, and so they can keep developing. But I think neither one of Greg Hardy definitely doesn't need to be booked as a co-main or main event. If I'm okay with him being on the prelims, I'm okay with him maybe being on the main card, but I'm just not okay with him being the main or the co-main event right now.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of ridiculous. I don't really know why. I think it's just a name thing, you know. Putting somebody who is known in another sport, and then you put the name up there, that's why they're doing it. I mean, that's kind of easy to see. He kind of brings star power with that. He's not a star in combat sports, but and he wasn't. I mean, I don't really know that much about football. I don't even know how known he was in an NFL, but he still was an NFL player. So I think for the UFC, you know, having that behind his reputation is a good selling point for him as a fighter.
But the UFC is known for that, though, Keith, because you think about it, Brock Lesnar, his first fight, I want to say, was a main event against Frank Mir. I think when Randy Couture fought James Toney, I want to say that was like main event on co-main event. And then I want to say CM Punk first fight maybe was a co-main event. It was definitely on the main card. So it's like it all depends. It's like when they get up, whenever they can do like a quote-unquote false promotion or they bring in a guy from another sport, they feel like they have to put that person in a co-main or main event status. So to me, that makes no sense. Let them get some wins first. So, because even if you look at CM Punk, where he trained a whole year before his first fight, I think it was a year to 18 months before his first fight, and he got demolished by Mickey Gall. Then he went and trained again for about 8 to 10 months and got demolished again. And then James Toney, he didn't even make it out the first round against Randy Couture. And then Brock Lesnar first fight, he ended up getting tapped out by Frank Mir. So past history would tell you that you shouldn't do this to guys coming from other sports, making a UFC debut, and you should probably just put them on the main card in a regular slot, but not in the main or co-main event form.
Yeah, you make a good point because, you know, the UFC thinks just because you have a guy who attracts eyes to your card means that it's going to make a good fight. but they neglect the guy's actual ability to produce a good fight. Like, if you ask me, you know, I was pretty open to CM Punk coming to the UFC. You know, I had heard about that since years ago. Like, they had, you know, I'm pretty sure he's been training MMA for, you know, a much longer time than since the time when he was actually training, knowing he had a fight. You know, that's been, CM Punk's kind of come to UFC, has kind of been in the making for, you know, long, for a while now. So, you know, I was open to seeing that. But the thing is that I think the UFC just neglects the fact that he's just not a good fighter yet. Like, and that's not to say that he can't become a good fighter, but just putting, like, it doesn't matter where you place somebody on the card, that's not going to make them produce a better fight. Like, they're only as good as they are. Like, it's not going to hype them up and make them more, you know what I'm saying? Things don't just pop out of nowhere overnight. Like, he's going to be the fighter he is, whether he's on the early fight pass or whether he's, you know, on the not even on the regular prelims or he's on the main card. It's going to be the same fight. It really doesn't matter. You know, some guys rise to the occasion when they get a title fight, but that's guys, you know, that mostly happens for guys who have many other MMA fights, not a guy that's just coming in. Like, CM Punk doesn't even know the game. You're taking this guy out of the WWE. I mean, they just need to understand this. WWE, okay, I grew up watching WWE, and I respect what they're doing. But they just need to understand that the WWE is not the same as the UFC. Just because you were a star in the UFC, in the WWE, does not mean that you can do MMA. Like, all these guys want to come out here and try to get a fight. It doesn't mean that you're going to be successful just because you were a champion in WWE. You can still get beat up when you come to the UFC. It's not the same game. You know, you're training a lot harder for different things. And the big difference is they're a lot stricter on the substances that you can have in your body. So if you want to be a lot stronger, you know, you go to the WWE and you can be on all these substances. When you come to the UFC, you're not going to look as good because you're not able to hydrate the same way. You know, they're not putting up with that. USADA, there's no USADA for WWE. So these guys want to come over here and, you know, and try to look the same, and they get exposed. So that's what happened to Brock Lesnar when he first came. CM Punk, you know, might not even be meant for MMA, but I mean, he should still train and still try to get better. But the promotion just needs to realize that no matter where you put him on the card will not make him a better fighter. He can only make him a better fighter.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, I think they went about it the right way with CM Punk. You know, they gave him a year to train, you know, a year to 18 months to train. And then, you know, they put him in there against a guy, you know, Mickey Gall, who was definitely experienced, but basically he wasn't a top five, top 10 guy at the time. But, you know, Mickey Gall, you know, he did his thing against CM Punk. He did what he was supposed to do. But speaking of WWE, you know, some news dropped today, that August 17th, we'll get the rematch for DC versus Stipe for the heavyweight championship belt. And I know me and you have been advocates of Stipe getting a rematch a while back, but we also been advocates for him to get back in the ring and fight somebody else like the other heavyweights have done. So what was your reaction when you heard the news today about DC versus Stipe 2?
My reaction was like, damn, you know, I was over here telling you that, you know, Stipe's just got to take another fight. And I still think that he should have taken another fight because
me too.
I still think that it's not going to help him in there, the fact that he's just been sitting out for a year after getting knocked out. I mean, guys always take time off after they get knocked out. it's actually, I'm pretty sure it's recommended, you know, for your health. If you get, you know, if you get finished in a fight via knockout, you know, it's best for fighters to take anywhere from 6 months to a year off to, you know, really let the brain heal. But I'm pretty sure that's, you know, what they're supposed to do. A lot of fighters will get right back in there, but that's their own personal choice. You know, Stipe, I just don't think it's going to help him because it's different when you sit out a year and you come back and fight, you know, Derek Lewis or something like that, like a guy who it's not Daniel Cormier. Like, it's not the same thing. It's different when you sit out a year and then you come back and fight Arlovsky, or when you come back and fight, who's another heavyweight, Justin Willis. Like, those guys are not on the same level as DC is in the heavyweight division. Like, those guys don't even, like, rank, they don't even match up the same. Like, it don't even look like the same with those guys. So you can come back after a year and fight those kind of fights, but and then I wish that he had come back sooner and picked up one fight, picked up at least one win, you know, had one warm-up fight before going into the rematch. You know, that'd be, like, my immediate thoughts about it. It's just, damn, Stipe, I don't know, coming back to fight one of the greatest fighters ever after getting knocked out, sat out for a year, and now he's going to come back. I don't know. I mean, I do like the fact that they're making this one instead of the Lesnar fight, and I was also happy for you when I heard it because I was like, damn, you know, I read the report, and I was like, wow, Lee's about to be real happy right now. You know, Lesnar's out, and your boy Stipe is going to get his rematch. So I was like, damn, Lee's going to be very happy. So I was happy for you when I heard it. And I'm happy that he's getting his shot back. But I just wish that he would have took a tune-up fight. That's how I feel about it.
Man, I'm with you on this one, man. As much as I love Stipe, I really think he should have had another fight. And the reason I say that is because I'm with you. You're going to fight probably one of the top five MMA artists of all time coming off a year layoff. But DC is coming off a year layoff also. So they both last fight was DC fought Derrick Lewis, which was, a two-round fight. So basically he has had a fight since he fought Stipe last, and Stipe hasn't fought since the DC fight. So that being said, I'm kind of skeptical of what we're going to see in that fight as far as I really think there will be some ring rust because both of these guys are top-tier guys, and both of these guys have been off for a while. Stipe been off because, you know, he's been voicing his frustration over not getting an immediate rematch. DC been out because of multiple injuries. So I'm happy that we get this fight, but I'm also skeptical that this fight might not be as pleasing to the eye as we probably want it to be because of the layoffs. But I'm very happy that it's not Brock Lesnar. I'm just happy that it's not Brock Lesnar because he did nothing to warrant a title shot. He hasn't won a fight in the UFC, I want to say, since 2010. So I just never understood the matchmaking that led to Lesnar versus DC when Lesnar has really showed us that he was a flash in the pan UFC fighter and he really has done nothing. But at the same time, he was on top of his game until he got sick. You know, when he had to have that emergency surgery that almost killed him, you know, he was on top of the heavyweight division. Then he came back, and he has never been able, since he's come back, he has never been able to take shots to the body. Every time he's been dropped, it always comes from a punch to the stomach or a knee to the stomach, and it always bends him over. So I think him getting an octagon was never going to be a good thing, especially going against a top-notch fighter like DC. And the fans never were sold on that fight. I don't even think casual UFC fans were sold on that fight because there's nothing that you could tell me or show me that tells me that Brock Lesnar has a chance of beating Daniel Cormier. There's nothing you can tell me or show me that proves that. Especially now, the heavyweights have to be under 265. Brock used to come in at 270, 275, sometimes 280 when he was fighting at heavyweight.
Yeah, so I'm happy that I'm happy that he is retired. Even though he, I don't know how you can really retire when you never were active in the sport. You know, for the past 3 years, he doesn't. There hasn't been any talk of a fight besides this one, and. Yeah, that's kind of a snooze for me. I really don't even know what to say about that.
Plus, if you look at him, in his WrestleMania match, he wasn't even cut up like he normally was. You could tell that he's off the juice now. His body looks different. He looks different. I think the way he moved around in the ring was different. So I just don't see... There's no way he could win that fight unless something freakish was to happen during that fight with DC that he got lucky and came away with a win. I don't see any way of him being a technical fighter or a skill mixed martial artist where his skills would dictate him winning over Daniel Cormier. So I'm glad it didn't happen. I'm glad we don't have to talk about it no more. We can move on to DC versus Cormier in August. And then, you know, we'll see what happens down the road with DC and Stipe down the road, depending on who wins the belt.
You said we can move on to DC versus Cormier.
I mean, DC versus Stipe, my bad.
Yeah, that was good. So, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, how do you feel about this weekend's main event? You have Ally Kinta and Cowboy Cerrone. That's kind of a fight. That's kind of a fight I didn't expect. You know, they kind of came out of left field with that one. I really wouldn't have matched up those two guys. Not that it's not an intriguing fight. I'm pretty interested in it. You know, both of the guys coming off of pretty impressive performances. Ally Kinta more or less dominated Kevin Lee in their last fight. You know, at least in the later rounds, he pretty much took over rounds like 3, 4, and 5. I thought, and you know, pretty clear win for Ally Kinta. And then, you know, you have Cowboy, who, you know, he's on like I think either a 2 or. I think he's only on a 2-win streak, but he's won 3 out of his last 4. And the three wins out of his last 4 that he did win were all stoppages. You know, he's beaten, and they're all younger guys. You know, one thing with Cowboy, you know, one dynamic people always like to say is, you know, oh, Cowboy is, you know, he's getting too old. He needs to retire. You know, he can't hang with these young guys coming up. And a lot of times, when they pit him against, you know, these younger guys, you know, he usually comes in as the underdog. And I think he has for most of those fights. But he stopped a lot of those guys. You know, he fought Yancy Medeiros. He knocked him out in the first round. He fought Mike Perry. He stopped him via submission. I think it was an armbar in the first round. And then he just recently fought the Hernandez kid, who was talking a lot of smack at the press conference. I'm surprised Cerrone didn't just get up and slap him at the press conference for the stuff he was saying. But anyways, he was talking a big game, and then they got in there, and he got pretty much dominated for the first second of the fight. And then Cerrone stopped him in the second round. I'm pretty sure it was a TKO. So I was really happy to see that. That right there was probably one of the most happiest UFC moments in my life. Seeing Cerrone dominate that kid who was talking all that smack was one of the most proudest and happiest UFC moments I've ever had for myself. I was just overwhelmed with joy to see that. So these two guys, you know, Aikint and Cerrone, I think it's going to be a good fight because they've both been really looking good lately in their last couple fights.
Yeah. Actually, I wrote an article on that on this fight coming up. Cerrone and Aikint. You know, I wrote an article on that. Actually, I'm not going to give it away about what I wrote because, you know, I want people to go check it out. But I think it's more in line for Aikint in this fight than it is for Cerrone. I just think Aikint, basically, he has his eyes on getting another title shot. If he was to lose this fight, it just knocks him down a peg. Maybe even knocks him out of the top 10. So my thing is this fight is definitely more important for Aikint. I mean, not saying that it's not important for Cowboy Cerrone, but the thing about Cerrone is he's at a point now in his career where, you know, he floats around, you know. He'll float from 155 to 170, you know, stuff like that, to catch weight fights. So, you know, there's always going to be, you know, fight opportunities out there for Cowboy Cerrone. But the thing to keep in mind about Cerrone is, you know, he's been known to take fight after fight after fight after fight, take short notice fight, stuff like that. I think he's been good over these past couple fights is because he's letting his body rest. He's not constantly training and getting ready for fights like every month, every 6 weeks, you know. He's letting his body heal and, you know, he's preparing himself. So I think that's why he's looked good in these last couple of fights. This is a fight I really didn't see happening, but in a way I'm kind of glad it's happening because it should be an action-packed fight. You kind of make a good point about him normally getting dominated by veterans and normally beating young guys. So I really never thought about that. But he can beat you in so many ways because he's a good striker. He has good takedown. He can fight off his back. He can submit you. He can do a lot of stuff inside the octagon. So I think Aikint would definitely probably be best suited to keep fight on his feet and probably not try to get into a wrestling match or a grappling match. He'll probably want to keep it a striking contest because if we remember, Khabib made him look very pedestrian on the canvas during a fight. Not everybody can wrestle like Khabib, I understand that. But Aikint just seemed like he couldn't get back to his feet. He didn't know what to do with Khabib's pressure as far as having him on his back. So Aikint would definitely want to keep it on the feet, whereas I think Cerrone will probably want to take it to the mat. And this should be a good fight.
Yeah, I just, I mean, when he fought Khabib the first time, like say Aikint would have win, and, like, he's a number four in the world, Aikint, and then Cerrone's at number eight. So if Cerrone beats Aikint, it's most likely he's going to jump up at least two, probably three spots, depending on who's at number five and, you know, how that pans out. But, you know, he's definitely moving up if he can win this one. He might even take Aikint's number four spot, and Aikint might move down to number five. That I think is probably the most likely scenario if Cerrone were to win. And then once Cerrone's there, you know, he pretty much just needs one more win, and he's a title shot too. But the thing is if Iaquinta were to win, I just don't know, like, if Khabib's still going to be the champion, you know, he still has to fight Poirier, so, like, you never know who, if Poirier might even beat Khabib. You know, you could potentially have Poirier versus Iaquinta, which would be, that would be a hell of a fight. Now, I'm really thinking of it. I didn't even think of that possibility until just now, but that would be a hell of a fight. That would be a war. And I would actually really, I actually really want to see that now. I'm pretty sure those two guys already fought before. I feel like I've seen that fight before, but maybe it's just, maybe it didn't happen, but I feel like they have might have fought before years ago. But, yeah, Poirier and Iaquinta now would be awesome, an awesome fight. And so maybe we could potentially see that if Iaquinta would have won and Poirier would have won in September in Abu Dhabi. But the thing is, though, if Khabib were to – if say Khabib wins and then Iaquinta beats Cerrone, I could see Iaquinta taking another fight in between the time because you have to wait. I mean, it's only May. He's going to have to wait. I mean, you have 4 months, and then whoever wins the Khabib and Poirier is probably going to take at least 2 months off. I would think maybe 3 months off after that. So pretty much if Iaquinta wins, he already has to wait four – he has already has to sit out for 4 months until the title fight. And then I would think at least at minimum another 3 months. At least another 3 months before they would, you know, you would have his title fight if he would get it next. So if he were to get a title fight after beating Cowboy, he already would have to wait. I would think at least he would have to sit out 7 months before he had a title fight, and I think for Iaquinta that's kind of a long time. I mean, I know he did just fight in December. I want to say his fight with Kevin Lee was in December, but maybe I'm wrong. It might have even been. I think it was in January. I feel like it wasn't that long ago. But he already sat out. Like, you know, it's not that he doesn't take long layoffs. He can, but it's just like to take a long layoff and then fight Khabib is just, I don't know how good that is for him. I'd rather see him be a bit more active, take a fight, and not sit out. I don't think anybody sitting out and then waiting and then fighting Khabib is really a good idea. You know, and to add on to what you said is like, I just don't see how Iaquinta could change. Like, of course, I'm going to root for him if he were to fight Khabib, but I just don't see how he could, like, how what could he do differently to beat Khabib the second time? I mean, he's going to get taken down. I mean, unless you just – the only way to beat Khabib is just to not get taken down, but that's not – saying that is not the same as actually doing it. Like, not getting taken down is kind of difficult. I mean, you can have excellent takedown defense, but I've yet to see anyone not get taken down by Khabib. So, if there's a fight where that happens, I'd like to see someone send it to me because I've yet to see it, and I'd like to see it. But, you know, I would think Iaquinta gets taken down and he gets dominated for at least like two or three out of the rounds, and I just don't see. I mean, on the feet, Iaquinta has great boxing. You know, his boxing is in his pace, his cardio. You know, he can go five rounds almost no problem. I never really felt like he looked tired in the championship rounds versus Khabib. I never thought he looked tired in the championship rounds versus Kevin Lee. I thought he looked pretty sharp, actually, in both of those, you know, in the championship rounds of both of those fights. So he has no problem with cardio, and he has no problem with his boxing. I mean, if it's a stand-up fight, I give Iaquinta a shot versus anybody in the division. I think he might even have the best boxing in the top five in the lightweight division. I mean, Poirier has good boxing too, but that's, you know, they're probably, them two guys are probably right there. I mean, Ferguson, I mean, if you had a strike right there, I would put Iaquinta, I would think Iaquinta could put Ferguson away. We've seen guys hit Ferguson and you can knock him down. It's just like finishing him is so difficult, and especially when you're going down to lay some ground and pound on him. There's the threat, you know, from Ferguson of his bottom game. You know, he can tap you out off the strength of you trying to ground and pound him out. Like, you trying to play top game with Iaquinta, you know, with Ferguson is a dangerous game to play, because he'll turn that into a guillotine choke or something like that. Like, that's how Ferguson is. The guy is nuts. he's really, that's why he's so dangerous.
Plus, I think with Ferguson, though, we just get back to what happens if Al wins. I think if Al wins, I think especially if Poirier wins, I think Al gets a shot, unless the UFC got some back table talks with Ferguson that if Poirier wins or that he gets the winner of that fight. So I don't know whether or not it's some backdoor dealings on that. But I wouldn't mind seeing Ferguson get the winner of the Poirier-Khabib fight, and maybe Iaquinta just taking a break to get the winner of that fight, because I think the winner will fight in Madison Square Garden at the end of the year. So I think that'll happen. I'm kind of falling in love with Dustin a little bit, but I don't know whether or not Dustin can. Because Eddie Alvarez held Dustin Poirier on the mat for a long time in their first fight. And he took him down a couple times in their second fight. So, man, Khabib is just a tough guy, man. His wrestling and grappling is so top-notch and top-level that it's just crazy, man. So, but I think Iaquinta has a lot to gain. He has a lot to gain beating Cerrone, and he has a lot to lose if he loses to Cerrone. And I think if Cerrone wins, he doesn't call for a title shot. He calls for a fight with Conor McGregor. Because I think Cerrone, he's 0-4 in title fight. So I just don't see him calling for a title match if he wins. I think he'd rather have a big money fight with Conor McGregor than to fight for the belt.
Yeah, that's an interesting point right there, because, you know, Cerrone had come out and said, I forget what event they were at, but Cerrone was at an event that he wasn't fighting on. I forget what, like, pay-per-view card. I want to say it was UFC 234. Because they had a couple UFC fighters over there. I think it was Cerrone, maybe Paige VanZant, and one other fighter who also wasn't, like, none of them were booked on the card, but they were just at, like, the presser or the media day. I want to say it was UFC 234
yep.
media day. Cerrone was there, and the fans were asking him questions about the Conor fight, because at that time the rumors were really hot. Like, they were really circulating about that was the next fight, and it really almost was. You know, that fight, I'm pretty sure, I haven't seen, you know, I don't have 100%, but I'm pretty sure, you know, there was contracts and that was almost a thing, but I heard that it fell apart because McGregor didn't want to be a co-main event. You know, they wanted that to be a co-main event to whatever it was, you know, and Conor didn't want that. So that fight was definitely on the table. And when he was at UFC 234 Media Day, the fans had asked him about it, and they said, like, how – I don't know what was the question. Maybe, like, how would you go about the fight with Conor or something like that? And Cerrone said to the crowd, he said, I'm going to give the fans the fight that you guys want to see. I'm not going to try and take him down and submit him or anything like that. I'm going to stand – he basically said, I'm going to stand and bang with him, because that's the fight that y'all want to see, and that's how we're going to do it.
See, and to me, that's not smart. to me, the thing is, aren't you fighting to win the fight? If you're fighting to win the fight, why would you use everything in your toolbox to allow you to win the fight? Instead of saying, yeah, I'm going to stand and bang with him. I'm not going to try to take him down. I'm not going to try to submit him. I'm going to give you guys the fight you want to see. The fight we want to see is we want to see whether or not Conor been working on his game. Because if he ain't been working on his game, then he will never be champion again. Because everybody now is well-rounded. Everybody ain't one-trick pony. So I understand what my man Donald Cerrone is doing. You know, he's trying to hype it up, you know, stir up interest in that fight. But I know if he wins Saturday, he'll call out Conor McGregor. He won't call for a championship fight. And I know if Al Kinchin wins, he's calling for a title shot. And it'll be within his rights to call for the title shot. Because when he fought for the title against Khabib, I think he was number 12 at the time. So basically since their last fight to now, he has risen 8 spots. So, you know, you got to say something about perseverance. And he's been fighting his way back to the top. So you can't hate on that. But my article about this fight and what it means to both guys is definitely going to be a good read because I think a lot of people would definitely be kind of up in arms about my take, especially if Cerrone was to lose, what it means for his career compared to what it means for Ian Kent if he was to lose. But hopefully it'll be coming out here either today or tomorrow. And check it out and let me know what you think.
You've been having some gems here lately with the articles.
Huh?
You've been having some gems here lately with the articles.
Well, you know, like I said, I do a lot of fun. So basically I can put probably much more energy in it and much more thought into them because I just do it for fun. I just keep – and plus I only write, one a week. So – it's not like I'm just churning them out. You know, like you do and like Hiram do, you know, like Austin be doing, you know.
Yeah.
I can't keep up with you guys' pace because that's just not my lane. So when I do write something, I want it to be informative, man. So that's why, you know, I put all my all into it. I'm glad you like them, bro.
Basically, you're trying to say it's quality over quantity.
No. I'm not saying that at all because I like all your articles. I read all your stuff. I don't read all everybody's on our team. I mean, on the scrap news stuff because some of it, I really don't.
I mean, how are you gonna...
I always read all your stuff, though.
Yeah, no, same here. I mean, you'll be reading all day if you try to read every single article. I mean, there's a ton of articles that go out. It's understandable. Nobody can read everything.
Well, geez, you're a writer, though. So you can churn out an article probably in 10, 15, 20 minutes at the max, whereas me, I'm probably 30, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I can, but it's, you know, I have to, you know, I like to, you know, being a journalist too, like, we have, you know, this kind of like a code of conduct. I mean, how you're going to go about something that's going to be published. I mean, it's not just the writing, it's, you know, a lot of researching and fact checking, you know, especially fact checking certain things before I'm putting it into an article. I like to compare different things and look at different, you know, angles to take about a fighter. And, you know what I mean? There's a lot of creativity aspects to go into it too. So, you know, 25 minutes is that I could do it in 25. I could do things in 25 minutes, but it really depends on what it is. Most of the time I'd say it takes me longer than that because of the research and fact checking aspect and trying to take creative angles on it and really make it a good quality, like you said. So I could do a quick article, but I like to take my time so I can really perfect it and make it as good as it can be.
But what I want, what I really need you to write an article on is those performance enhancing vegetables. I think that would be key, man. Because when you pulled that out there, I actually went and looked it up. Man, beets are crazy.
Yeah.
Facts. No, I would have never thought in a million years that beets could do what they do to the body.
Facts. That's what I was trying to, like, when I posted that, because I was sitting there on Easter, and, you know, my family's, you know, having food together and we're hanging out, but I was kind of just sitting in my living room watching this infomercial on TV, and they were talking about beet juice, and it was like this product that you could order for like $29.99 or something, and they're sending you like all these little beet juice drinks, and I forget what was the name of it, but I watched it for like an hour. Like, this infomercial was like, it was a really long infomercial. I watched like the entire thing. Like, I was sitting there drinking something. I was sipping on something, and I just watched the entire thing, and I was like, man, this is crazy. Like, this thing's got all these benefits for the body. Like, they were saying how, as you know, beets has a certain it activates a certain it has a certain ingredient that your body, I think it's nitric oxide, maybe something like that. And it's an ingredient that's in the beets that your body produces naturally. But as you get older, it starts to decrease, and your body can only produce, you know, a certain amount of it. And it decreases the amount it produces as you get older. So, and that thing that it produces has a major effect, you know, a major positive effect on your energy and stamina. So if you're drinking the beet juice and you're getting older, if you're like a fighter who's getting into your, because when you're younger, you might not need it as much, but you'd still have the, you know, a little bit of an edge if you did use it. You'd just be that much more energized. But if you're a fighter who's, you know, going into the 30s and 40s, that would be a good thing, because you start drinking the beet juice and, I've never drinking it, so I can't talk about it firsthand, but the way they were describing it is like you start drinking this as you get older, and you're going to have that extra energy boost, that extra stamina to keep on going. So, you know, I posted it, and I tagged, you know, U.S. Anti-Doping, and I it was a serious question. They didn't respond to me, but I really wanted to ask USADA if that should be a banned substance, or if it's already a banned substance, the beet juice, because the way that they the way they were selling it in the infomercial, I was really invested in it, and I really even thought about buying some for myself just to try it, because I need to know.
Yeah, man, because I mean, when you posted it, I was like, man, what the hell are you talking about? And then I think the next day at work, you know, I had some dead time, and I looked it up, and I was like, oh, my God. But, yeah, man, that was kind of crazy, dog. But, you know, tonight, me and my man Keys, we ran down, Greg Hardy situation in the UFC, talked about DC, Stipe 2. Talked about the upcoming main event at the UFC Ottawa with Cowboy Cerrone and R.R. Kenta. We just talked about performance enhancing veggies to include beets. So today was a well-rounded show. And, thanks for listening to all our fans out there. Thanks for listening. Shout out to the Scrap News for giving me and Keys another platform to bring our listeners and our Twitter followers more MMA news and updates and stuff like that. Any last words for my man before you leave tonight?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, my apologies again that I was a few minutes late getting onto the show. When we first kicked off, I was a few minutes late. I had, you know, a few things going on, and I apologize for that. But otherwise, you know, like I always say, like we always say, you know, stay positive and just, you know, there's one author that I read, and one of the, you know, principles that he talks about is to always be like, try, learn to be a good listener and a better listener, but also you know, take what you hear with a grain of salt at the same time. You can be a good listener, but it doesn't mean you have to buy into everything that an individual is saying. You don't have to believe everything you hear, but learn to actually listen to it, because you might actually gain some useful knowledge from it. You know, not everything is so, you know, like a, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but just try to listen in the first place so you can, you know, because we wait to talk, but, you know, it's not just about what you give, it's about what you might receive too. So just try to listen to others and respect others, and that's it. Do for others as you'd want done for yourself. And that's pretty much all I got. We had a great show tonight, and I enjoyed talking with you tonight, Lee.
It's always a pleasure to catch up with you, buddy. I saw that you've got an article out there today. I'm going to go check it out. Like always. Hey, to the listeners out there, take care of yourself, take care of each other. Love, live, laugh, as always, in closing. Peace.